And we're not doing this for a living.
No.
No. More of a hobby.
You're not going to retire on this because thankfully you're already retired.
That's right.
This is what retirement looks like now.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
People working, how many hours do you do?
I know. We used to work 9 to 5. Now we work 5 to 9.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you enjoy it?
Yes. And every year we worry and we fret, and then it turns out okay, and then we think, oh, well, okay, we'll try it one more year.
Welcome back. I'm Donna Balzer, host of Helping Gardeners Grow. I'm so excited about Alan Gale. Did you hear that interview?
I did, and it just gets me so excited for growing tomatoes in summer. You know, one of my favorite smells in the summer is the smell of tomato. So I'm just getting excited.
Exactly. And the funny thing was, when we chatted with them, and we'll put the detailed names into the show notes so that people can see it, but they are only growing one kind of tomato. That just seems dangerous to me to just grow one kind. But they're growing the same kind that the original owner of their property was growing. And they just thought, we'll go for it. But I think if you listen in, you'll hear how a couple retired and then went ahead and started a whole new business. They bought a 3,500 square foot greenhouse with their property, and they are growing tomatoes. Well, I was really inspired. So let's listen in and see what Al and Gail have to say about growing organic tomatoes in a greenhouse when they've never grown anything before.
So you just wanted to get out of the big city.
That's right.
And what made you want to start farming, Al?
Well, we found the greenhouse, and Gail said that I needed something to do.
And we thought we could grow tomatoes. What's hard about that?
Yeah, and we just cranked up the greenhouse, and the rest is history.
Well, I thought we were going to grow maybe 30 plants. And Al said, well, if we turn the rows from east to west and go north to south, we could grow a lot more plants. And so he made space for 700 plants.
But we only actually plant
450.
Nice. So backing up a bit, you were trying to get out of the big city. You just showed up in Qualicum Beach.
And you bought we met in 2013.
13.
Yes. And we married November of 2014. And then we came out here in February of 2015.
Yep.
And we wanted to have something in common. Like when you're younger, you grow a family. And we thought, this would be a really nice activity to do together. And it is very nice when we're in the greenhouse and it's a sunny day and the tomatoes smell so good and we're working together. It's very rewarding.
She makes the best BLT this side of the Mississippi.
All we'd asked was, is there a grocery store nearby? We had never heard of Qualicum Beach. I didn't know anything about the town. And then Al came out. Part of our sale agreement was he could have 3 days with the owner to meet the customer and sort of learn the ropes of what the fellow did with his tomatoes at harvest. And that's when Al went into town and phoned me and he said, you're going to love it. It's such a nice, quaint, cute little town.
Aww. Yeah.
So we bought pretty much sight unseen and we just lucked out that everything turned out really well.
So really you weren't looking for a farm, though. You were just looking for an acreage, just a little getaway.
Correct.
Yes.
And what did you end up with here? What is this?
5 acres.
5 acres? And how big is this greenhouse?
3,600 square feet.
Wow. That's huge. So back up a bit more. Were you big gardeners in Calgary?
No.
No.
I used to water my plastic flowers.
And you moved out here and took over farm status on a farm with a 3,600 square foot greenhouse.
Right.
Yeah.
The fellow before you that you bought from was growing tomatoes.
Right.
And so you decided tomatoes?
Just decided to keep it going because he had a customer for the tomatoes. I like tomatoes. I thought they were easy to grow. Right.
And he had organic status too. Yeah. And so we wanted to continue on in his path type of thing. And we had to requalify for our organic status because there was a new ownership. And we had to requalify for the farm status because, again, it's new ownership.
Okay, so he was growing tomatoes. You decided to grow tomatoes. Are you even growing the same kind of tomatoes he grew, or did you look into different kinds?
We are growing beefsteak. Last year we tried Stupas and that one, Abrasion.
Well, that's what we grow
We grow beefsteak abrasion.
Correct.
Okay, so we decided we'd branch out and see if we could grow some other, and we tried Stupas, and it grows quickly, and we thought we'd have product earlier in the year because our tomatoes aren't ready till about the middle of August. However, Stupas has cherry tomato-sized tomatoes.
Mm.
They did not grow faster, and they're very, very time-consuming to pick. It's like picking berries versus picking tomatoes. And the customer did not want them because it was too labor-intensive to put them in packages for sale. Wow. So I made tomato sauce, and we have lots of it. And after that, I said to Al, why experiment with a good thing? Our beefsteak tomatoes are perfect. We know how to do them. Let's just stick with beefsteak.
And there are many, many kinds of beefsteak. This is the larger size tomato.
Yeah. We have had a 2.2-pound tomato.
And so what made you choose this abrasion variety?
It's organic seed.
It's organic seed.
Correct.
And each plant produces about 20 pounds.
All right. So how do you go through your year? What do you start with? How could the information that you know be shared with homeowners? How do you start your year?
We sterilize the greenhouse in the spring before we do any planting or anything. We use a food grade peroxide, and I spray it with my power sprayer, and it basically gets rid of all the mold spores that are in the air or on the ground or on the plastic, and also any of the pests or like bugs and flies and stuff like that have wintered in the greenhouse. It kills all their eggs off and everything else.
You order your seeds? Have you ordered those already?
Yeah.
Yes.
And they're here. I start planting them about the third week of February in the seed house, which means they're indoors under grow lights. The lights are down very close to the plants, and we cover the plants initially till the seeds sprout. And they're on heating mats. And then as the plants sprout, we take the paper off, just newspaper.
That you put over top of the seeds?
Yes, just to give them humidity.
So they don't use the domes, the plastic domes?
Well, we have about 30 or 35 trays. So it's all numbers game. Everything's a numbers game. So if you're going out buying plastic domes at $1.50 a shot, you know, it gets expensive. So that's why we use newspaper, and it does effectively the same thing. You're creating a humid environment for the seeds to sprout.
And are you putting them in an open tray or individual little units? What do you seed into?
Our first year, we discovered the ground was infested with wireworms. And we lost a third of our crop the first year. They eat the roots of the tomato, and then the tomato just wilts and falls over because the roots are gone. So the second year I decided, So the red beer cups that you can buy at the dollar store, I went and bought, and I cut the bottom out of them, and that's what I plant into, so then I don't have to transplant into a bigger container because that container is big enough for them till they are put into the ground. And they soak the water up from the bottom, just like the little black seed trays. And when we planted the second year, we put the cup and the plant directly into the ground. And what that did was the plant protected and kept the worms away from the roots until the roots had got stronger and older and sturdier. And then the wireworms didn't want that. Plus, we had planted wheatgrass down the middle between the rows to attract the wireworms to it. Versus our tomato plants.
Yeah, as a bait.
We still lost a lot of plants, but we didn't lose a third. And the beer cups worked beautifully, so I have used them ever since.
When do you take off the beer cup?
I didn't take them off for 2 years in a row. And then this last year, like I just put them straight into the ground. And then this last year, after we had cleaned up after harvest, we discovered that the roots were going straight down and they weren't spreading out. And we thought, well, let's try and see. So we took them out of the cups, put them directly into the ground, and this year when we harvested, the root base was like 4 feet. The roots had spread. And we got our biggest crop ever this year.
Yeah.
So the wireworms seem to have disappeared, hopefully, in 5 years, which they said they have a 5-year cycle.
And are you still planting wheatgrass?
Yes, we did last year. Yep.
Because you know what's pretty unusual
is that you're growing in soil. That is very unusual in today's greenhouse world. When all the leaders in this area are in Holland, because that's sort of the big thing they do in Holland, and all the Dutch people seem to be fantastic at growing, and they really steer away from soil because it's so complicated. And you guys just walked right in and started growing in soil.
It's
a way of doing things, and I think, to me, soil is just natural. It's there. I think we get a better taste out of a soil-grown product as opposed to a hydroponic product. The only problem we were having was a high nitrogen content, and what that does is that it stunts the plant from absorbing the nutrients into the plant itself.
They grow leaves,
yeah,
all kinds of leaves, but they don't grow tall, and they sort of flop over like elephant ears.
Yeah.
And produce nothing.
And you found out that was too much nitrogen.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then so...
We didn't have very many of those,
no,
though.
But so learning process again, trial and error, and we were using a fertilizer that had a little bit higher nitrogen content. If this was outside gardening, the rains would wash out some of those nutrients. But because it's in a greenhouse, it's an enclosed environment, it gets concentrated. So you got to use fertilizers that are proportionate to what you want in the soil.
And when you're organic, it's very, very, very difficult to find organically approved products, correct?
Correct. Yeah, the fertilizers have to be IOPA or OMRI. OMRI approved. And they qualify what's in the product. Mm. So now we go with a BioFert 413 liquid fertilizer. And then to prevent blossom end rot, we also use calcium fertilizer. And what that does is the calcium prevents blossom end rot in a plant.
And you can tell when it's getting to need the calcium because the leaves start to go a little bit purple along the edges.
Yeah.
Oh. And so once they're about a foot tall, I transplant them into the soil.
Same depth or deeper?
Deeper, yeah. You plant them to the bottom leaf on the plant. So you bury the two bottom leaves on the plant. And you kind of tip it on its side a little bit. I'm scared of breaking the stalk, so I don't do that too much. But then it starts to grow, and after about 2 weeks, you have to prune every 2 or 3 days because it gets the...
Spurs.
And honestly, some of the plants, you know, they're like kids. Some of the plants are just little devils, and they produce spurs constantly.
Well, you talk to them like kids.
And other plants just grow nicely, so... You spend, I would say, every third day I'm in there for about 4 hours pruning.
Okay, so you're talking about the sprouts, the suckers.
Yep.
And you start doing that about 2 weeks after you planted them?
Well, yeah, when they start, approximately.
And what style do you use? Do you have one straight stalk or do you let it branch off into two or three?
No, we have one straight stalk and we tie them after they're about 4 feet tall. We stake them first, initially, while they're just fledgling, and then we tie them with strings that Al has dropped down from a lattice in the roof, and that helps them grow straight and tall, and they will grow to about 8 feet, but we top them off at about 6 or 7 feet because we can't reach that high and we don't need that growth.
What time of year would that be happening?
About July.
Yeah, but end of June, July.
So you start the seed indoors in about the third week of February, and they're started directly in the beer cups, the red beer cups.
In very nutrient-enriched soil.
So you're only handling them once, then you put them in.
Yep.
Third week of February, they sprout in what, about a week or so?
Yep, 10 days at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now we're into March.
Now you water every other day by hand as the little guys grow, and you raise the grow lights up as they grow taller. And what I do is I kind of rotate the trays, so the trays in the middle are moved to the edge and, you know, they all get a fair chance at suntanning.
Mm-hmm.
And
when do they go out into the greenhouse? Do you wait for the soil to be a certain temperature?
Yes, the soil has to be at least 60 degrees before we can transplant them. But we start hardening them about the end of April. Depending on the year, like if it's really warm, we can harden them sooner. But we're pretty careful with them.
Okay. And then once they're hardened, they're planted in deeper than they were in their cups, but the cups are taken off.
Yep.
And you fertilize them in that day that you water them?
Yep. It's a root enhancer, and it really engrosses the roots and has little spores on the roots to make them grow.
The mycorrhizae?
Yes.
That's it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is it the Mike brand?
Mike's, yeah.
And you're putting that at the base as you plant them to encourage the roots.
And that really seems to help.
Yeah.
Because once they're in the ground, they grow overnight almost. You can see the difference.
Well, interesting that you wait for the soil to heat up. So you do not heat it yourself. You wait for it to heat up.
We've had many discussions about that. Al has thought of many different ways he might be able to do it, like running hot water hoses underneath the soil and all that sort of thing. But I had reached the stage where I said, enough. We're not investing in hot water heat for the tomatoes.
I think if we're 40 years old doing this project, it'd be different. But, you know, doing the, I put the electrical into the greenhouse.
The water system.
The water system in.
The fans.
The fans. You know, it's all an investment for us, but you got to get a return on your money too. So,
are you telling me the previous owner did not have electricity?
Oh no.
Or automatic irrigation?
No, that's all ours.
That's incredible.
And one thing that I found was fascinating, it's just sort of common sense, but we hadn't thought about it, was the spacing between the plants.
Yeah.
Tomatoes really need to be able to have air circulation around them. So with our long rows now, instead of planting the 700 we could, if we planted them close together, we spread the plants out about 18 to 20 inches. And believe it or not, by the end, they're touching anyway. But with the fans and that space, they get a lot of air circulation and they produce a lot of yellow flowers because of that. Yeah. And then that means we get more fruit.
And are you bringing in anything to help you with the pollination once you've got your tomatoes growing?
No, it's just airflow we're using. Like we have what's called a horizontal airflow fans, and they basically move the current of air in a big circle inside the greenhouse. And then we have two exhaust fans that if it gets too hot inside the greenhouse, then they'll kick in on a thermostat and expel the hot air that's inside, that's trapped inside the roof.
And we also use a shade cloth on the south side of the greenhouse because in the really, really hot days of summer, it gets well over 100 degrees in the greenhouse, and the tomatoes like it best between 65 to 85.
Do you open those great big doors? And
Yes.
So it's almost like a cold frame than a greenhouse if you're not heating it.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Are you adding any supplementary heat?
No. We have in the past, but it's not efficient.
Yeah, rented a big heater.
We rented a big heater one year. But
why we got the new plastic, because it's double plastic.
Yes.
And we thought it would be warmer, and it works with condensation.
Yeah. And it prevents condensation because of the double plastic. But that's probably called a coal frame as opposed to a greenhouse.
Or a hoop house, call them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right.
Mm. Right. So you're helping the tomatoes get established by keeping them out of the wind and giving them that extra solar heat.
Correct.
But you're not applying a lot of fossil fuels to keep it hot.
No. You got to balance what your revenue is going to be as opposed to what your costs are going to be. And if they break even, well, it's not really worth it.
And we're not doing this for a living.
No.
More of a hobby.
You're not going to retire on this because thankfully you're already retired.
That's
right. This is what retirement looks like now.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
People working how many hours do you
I know. We used to work 9 to 5. Now we work 5 to 9.
But
you enjoy it.
Yes. And every year we worry and we fret, and then it turns out okay. And then we think, we'll try it one more year. And then, you sit around in January and February and the days are long and you think, we'll do it again.
Oh, that's so sweet.
But we bought a boat and we want to go boating and we want to do a little more exploring. So we've said to ourselves, okay, we're not dedicating our lives to these plants this year. We will do what we need to do for them, but then we're going to leave them alone and let them stay home by themselves.
Yeah. Well, last year we did 3,000 pounds. So, I mean, I'm not, it's not, you know, it's not bad for the size of greenhouse
operation.
Yeah, for the size of the operation we have, it's not bad.
And you're not even filling the greenhouse, really. You were saying
no.
You have 3,500 square feet, but you're only, what, half filling it or three quarters?
Well,
three quarters.
We're filling about three quarters, but again, we're giving them good space between the plants because they need air.
And when do you start fertilizing?
A month after they've been in the ground.
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be end of May, probably, first fertilizer. So are you in there every day pruning? Give me the truth, Gail.
Every time I walk in there, I prune a little bit. But I set myself up to do it every 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I've missed a day or two of walking through, then the third day, that's a pruning day.
Because they can really shoot up.
And the first year, we didn't know about pruning. We knew a little bit about pruning. So we'd cut the spurs off, right?
Yeah.
When we saw them. But we weren't very good at spotting the spurs. And we had this elderly couple come over to see the greenhouse. It looked like a jungle. It was just a massive green. And they walked through, and then the lady in a very quiet voice said, "Do you prune?" And I said, "Oh, yes." And I showed her, and she said, "Well, I think you could prune a little bit more." And I said, "Oh, like what?" And she said, "Well, you should take the bottom leaves off." She said, "You can prune everything up to the first fruit." And I said, "All those leaves?" And she said, "Yes." So after she left, I went in there and I was pruning away. And Al came in and had a heart attack nearly. He said, "You're going to kill the plants. You're going to kill the plants." And after that, I got braver and bolder and I pruned even harder. And she was right. You prune up to the bottom of where the fruit is starting to grow.
So you don't do that while they're still in bloom, but once they start to form the fruit.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, up to the first truss.
Yes.
Yeah. And any truss that goes on after that that's got no blooms on it, it gets tossed. Okay. If there's no fruit on that vine, then it's coming off.
Yeah. I think this is tough love for tomatoes. People are going to love to hear this because, honestly, people are shy about pruning.
Oh, they're nervous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so that's...
But if the way we look at it or the way we've been reading... is that if it's not doing anything for the fruit or the blossom, if it's just enhancing growth of the plant, that's where all the energy is going.
Yeah.
And if you want your energy to go into your fruit, there's where you want it to be, not on the leaf.
So the plants are winding down. You've picked off those lower leaves. You've got fruit forming on the lower branches. You've still got maybe one or two trusses coming. We're getting into later August. What is the maintenance required or even into September? What are you doing by then?
Just picking the fruit.
Okay. So you're not continuing to take out leaves during the rest of the growing season?
No.
The pruning is pretty well done by then.
Pruning is done by the end of what, August?
Definitely by the end of August.
Okay.
Yeah.
No leaves left on the plant?
Oh, yeah. There's leaves around where the fruit is.
Okay, but that's it. No lower leaves left.
No.
And we pick the fruit and we package it in 20-pound cardboard boxes. And there's a special way you have to do it so that the stems don't puncture the fruit. So the bottom layer, you put in the box upside down, and then the next layer you put right side up so that none of the fruit gets punctured in transport or in the box.
Do you have to buy all new boxes for this?
Well, the fellow that we purchased this place from had... about 5,000 boxes, so we're still using his boxes.
And then I go in and clean up and throw stuff in our compost. We don't compost and then reuse the compost in the greenhouse. We throw it over the hill and let it compost itself. The reason being is that we don't want to reintroduce something. If you don't compost properly, your compost is nothing. So we don't want to reintroduce something that's not composted properly.
Anything else you want to share for someone who's just starting with tomatoes?
Don't be afraid to get your hands dirty. Don't be afraid to get down on your hands and knees. Your back's going to be sore, but it's very rewarding.
Are you guys having a lot of fun?
Yeah.
Some days we're a little bit ticked. I don't know. You just get tired.
Yeah,
we're over 60.
Okay.
Yeah. We are elderly farmers. And our children thought we were a little bit off.
Well, because you don't have a farming background, you were a teacher.
That's right, yep.
What were you doing in Calgary, Al?
I was with the RCMP.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I retired 20 years.
Before you met Gail, you had retired?
Well, I'd retired once. I had a construction company in Calgary after the RCMP. And then I met Gail while I was doing construction. And we had come out here to visit my brother in the summer. And we were looking for properties around Victoria. And every house we went into to look at to buy, I'd say $70,000, $100,000 to renovate. And then it didn't give Gail the elbow room that we wanted. Mm-hmm. So I'm at work one day, and I come home from work, and Gail said, I found our property on the internet.
The comment was, oh, yeah.
We booked our tickets, and then...
We booked our tickets on Wednesday?
Wednesday, flew out Saturday morning, looked at this property.
And our realtor's standing there looking at us like, here's a couple of crazy birds.
And we walked down and looked at another property, and we leaned over the hood of her car and wrote out the offer and then gave it to her.
That's the first decision I've made in 12 years.
That fast.
That fast.
We never had a doubt, did we? As everybody said to us, oh, land isn't that expensive out there, is it? And I said, no, it only took four houses to buy one property.
Well, thank you so much. It's You're been welcome. So, so entertaining and so interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow, Donna, that was another great interview. They really, like I said before, they get me so excited to get some tomatoes growing. It is incredible that they are both retired and they now have this huge tomato production. They've really got it down to a science and they just seem to really enjoy what they're doing.
Did you hear the part about wireworms? This is a really interesting question for people that are growing. Say they've got a lawn today. Right now you've got a front yard lawn. You're thinking, I'm going to convert it this spring into a vegetable garden. Well, what happens with wireworms is they are used to feeding on grass roots. And in Gail and Al's greenhouse, the former gardener there had planted grass in patterns. He used his lawnmower to keep it clean. And so the greenhouse was filled with wireworms. And when they took out the grass, the first thing the wireworms did was they went to their tomatoes. So this is just a little lesson, I guess. It's not really a question this week. It's more of a lesson. If you are currently growing a garden in a lawn, like you're thinking of converting your lawn, it could take a season or two for root crops especially, but tomatoes and any other thing that's in particular, those wireworms are going to be hungry. They're looking for a place to go, and it's about a five-year cycle. So they did try nematodes. They tried them. They may not have used them at the right time or in the right way. The nematodes should kill the wireworms, which the immature stage of the click beetle. They didn't, and so they're kind of stuck. They had years, a couple of years at least, with trouble, and now they finally worked it through by taking all the lawn out inside the greenhouse and going from there. And I thought that that wireworm story was interesting.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, I have had wireworms in my garden, in particular in my potatoes, which is more traditional, a more traditional crop to be susceptible to that. And when I first heard that, I was so surprised that the tomatoes were susceptible to the wireworms as well. And when I put my garden in, we did put down cardboard and then built raised beds over top of grass. So it's so interesting, though, that tomatoes, mm-hmm. tomato roots, I had no idea.
Yeah, well, wireworms are just hungry and what they want are roots. They want to eat things and that they're virtually a problem everywhere. This is why I absolutely love the root poaches. You've heard me talk about these before, and if people want to know more, they can look on my shop. But I actually find when you're starting with new soil, maybe compost or perhaps just some soil that you bought, the root bags seem to exclude the wireworms, and I've had no problem on my potatoes when they're grown inside the root poaches, so I really love that.
Yes, actually, that is my goal this year, is to grow my potatoes in the root pouches. So I'm getting excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Spring, it's coming. Yay. So this is our first of our two podcasts on tomatoes. Next time, we're going to bring you the really exciting Craig LaHoulier. And you suggested him. What were you thinking when you suggested him?
Well, I have heard him before, and he is very knowledgeable on tomatoes, and he has taken part in the Dwarf Tomato Project. So he has so much to say. So that is going to be a great episode for people to tune into as well.
So I hope it doesn't seem like too many tomatoes, but the contrast, compare and contrast, Allendale are only growing one variety and they're only growing them for the grocery store. And Craig is going crazy. He's got maybe 1,500 to 2,000 varieties. So he's got a lot on the go. And it'll be fun to hear that compare and contrast, how you and why you would grow so many different kinds. It's really going to be fun.
Excellently. I look forward to it.
Music on this and every episode was written and produced and performed by Brennan Anderson.
Podcast produced by Robin Buchanan from West Coast Gardener YouTube channel. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you'd like to see the complete show notes, including all the links that were mentioned during this podcast, please go to the show notes on donnabalzer.com. That's donnabalzer.com. DonnaBalzer.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the shop because that's what supports this podcast. Thank you so much.